Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. I'm your host Shane Lees, and joining me tonight I've got Harry Philby again.
All right, buddy, good to be here.
Oh, isn't that nice? Good to be here.
Oh. Salah, who gets in on the act, it's surely Liverpool's day now. Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular! Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal! Manchester City champions!
Well, listeners, I hope you're good to be here too, and we're going to get straight into it. Let's talk about the news, first of all, as we always do. Brendan Rodgers has said that Celtic fans should be alarmed by their slow start to the season. What do you think about that? Should Celtic fans be alarmed?
I mean, alarming for them is not winning every game by a landslide. So, yeah, I guess they should be. but I don't know. I wish I cared at all. But I just don't at all about Celtic. I'm sorry. It's just like, I know I'm meant to, but...
I suppose for me, is it a case of if he's saying they should be alarmed, even if you're the most dominant side in the league by a country mile, you're still probably going to go on and win the league. Yeah. Aren't you a bit concerned if your manager's turning around and saying that? Because you've got to think, if he's saying that to the public, and what managers always say to the public is like the scaled back version of what they'll say to their players, what's he saying to his players? That they should be terrified or something?
Yeah, well, I suppose it leads to more going into the future where it's a problem, because they had a truly awful transfer window by the looks of it. Like, I haven't really watched them play or anything, but by the looks of it, they sold, you guys got Armstrong, didn't you? They sold Moussa Dembélé, they lost Paddy Roberts. And from what I know about them, they were basically their three best players over the past couple of years, or like three of at least their top players. So maybe with a little bit of Gerrard's Rangers starting to look a little bit better, maybe there's concerns about the future. But I think for this season, I just can't see anybody really catching up with them.
No, I mean, Hearts have had a very good start and Rangers are looking a lot more impressive, but it's still, I think there's only like 3 or 4 points in it. Yeah. So it's just a case of Celtic go on a run, it's going to go that way. But I suppose the positive thing is Scottish football is getting slightly more competitive again. Even if it turns into a two-team league, that's better than a one-team league.
Yeah, it might actually be watchable.
Yeah. The other piece of news, Tottenham have said that their stadium will be the greatest stadium that's ever been built. Of course, it's not actually completed, so that's a pretty good premonition for the future. But apparently the uncompleted stadium will be the greatest stadium ever built. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a really odd thing to say, but I guess you're not exactly going to come out and say, oh, it's going to be like the fifth best stadium ever built. Like, obviously, they're going to come out and say it's the best, but I don't know. I mean, it does look amazing. It does look really nice. I do really want to go. But best stadium ever, I think, generally belongs to sort of community stadiums like Wembley, like the sort of national stadiums, as opposed to club stadiums. I don't think anyone other than a Tottenham fan is going to call it the best stadium ever. So I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading some of the features they're going to have on this stadium. One of them is a retractable pitch, which gets replaced by an NFL pitch, so it's an artificial pitch for NFL. There's a skywalk, allows people to walk really high from the looks of it. It doesn't seem any more advanced than that. They've got some lights to help the pitch grow. It's pretty cool, some lights. Yeah, more things about retractable grass. I mean, that all sounds really nice. Bloody irrelevant to a football stadium, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit weird.
This is going to be the greatest stadium ever built because of all these unique features that are utterly redundant for a football stadium. It doesn't matter. Most football clubs don't go, oh, well, our stadium must be rubbish if we can't have a retractable NFL stadium in it. Jesus. Oh, we did something wrong. We forgot we were a football club.
Yeah, I see. I guess that is the biggest risk, is hopefully they have still tried to remember that they are building a football stadium, and it's not like how... when our West Ham having the Olympic Stadium and it isn't a football ground and nobody likes going there and West Ham fans don't like it and it's corrupt and all of that kind of stuff. And hopefully Tottenham won't have forgotten about that and realised that they should make it fundamentally a football ground with all of those as extras rather than making those the stuff that people want to go and see. So we'll have to wait and see what it's like.
You really hope so. That simple stuff like acoustics got thought about, you know, how well sound carries across the stadium. That's just such a major thing. Never really know about those things until they're finished, and you'd hope that they, you know, hire some kind of view and say, yeah, this is where the sound's going to bounce and this is how it's all going to work out. But you also see the other things about the shopping stuff they're mentioning and the really nice areas for people with the fancy tickets to go and have coffees and all of this kind of stuff. And I was looking at it and go, God, I mean, who actually gives a shit? Like, not being funny. When I go to Southampton, St. Mary's is a rubbish stadium. It's a flat pack stadium, but has no atmosphere whatsoever. When I go to a stadium, all I'm concerned about is there a burger van on the way? Right? And when I get into the stadium, can I find my seat? Is it even slightly signposted? In St. Mary's, signposting is bloody awful. Is it kind of clean? Am I going to be touching stuff and getting diseases? I don't care about the rest. I really don't.
That's the most you thing I've ever heard, that a stadium should be clean.
I don't want to hold a railing and go like, oh good, botulism. You know, it's like cutting yourself on a can. Oh good, I'm actually going to be diseased now.
Oh.
But, I mean, this is basic stuff that every stadium needs, and all the rest of it is just stuff for the people who pay for the fancy tickets. And I guarantee you, 90% of fans do not give a shit. So they hear all this stuff and go, wait, so our stadium's taking too long for the things that none of us are ever going to get to use or see. Great. Isn't that wonderful? They said the official delay was wiring. When you're at a stadium, apart from for the lights, do you look around and go, oh, look at these electrical features everywhere? You know, I've got a plastic seat and there's concrete under me. I don't care about this. Oh.
See, I actually like St. Mary's. I really like the fact that it's absolutely jam-packed full of seats. Like, you see a lot of stadiums these days with, like, gaps everywhere. But St. Mary's is just one big, long mesh of seats. But did
St.
You see
Mary's
the thing
could
you'd...
be a good stadium if we had better fans, but we were rubbish fans.
Did you see in your last game against us, they were trying to do trying to beef up the crowd with that like opening display where they turned off all the lights and started spitting fire everywhere and gave everyone those clacker things? It didn't work at all.
I wasn't at the game. I saw you on the TV, but I actually, when that came on, I just sighed. I know you were at the game. I also almost sent you a text just saying, oh, look, pretty light show before the 0-0.
Yeah, I mean, I looked over to the people I was with, and as soon as it ended, and like obviously the crowd is, everyone's applauding, and I just went, that's a bit naff. And everyone's,
I think everyone's attitude is, that's a bit naff. I really wish someone would tell the people who are building these stadiums, we don't want all the bells and whistles, because who's going to be paying for those bells and whistles? The fans and your ticket prices. So for the stuff that only 10% of the actual fans are ever going to be able to use, not even that probably, mostly it's going to go to the corporate seats, the rest of them have to pay for it in their CC tickets, because the ticket prices will go up. Look at the Emirates. Look at what happened there. Ticket prices will go up. And so as much as I'm, you know, making light of some of this, this comes back onto the actual fans who didn't need all this crap. They didn't care about it. They don't want it. And, I think sometimes when clubs are building these stadiums, they need to actually think again, this is a football stadium. Make sure we get all of that covered first. And then almost ring fence, these are the costs that the average fan needs to pay for as part of what their ticket's going to be. The rest of it's got to come from somewhere else.
To be fair, they haven't exactly tried to hide the fact that this is basically just a massive ego trip as well. Like, they've deliberately given it about 500 more seats than the Emirates because they've had a smaller ground than Arsenal for pretty much their entire history. So I think they've made quite a big deal out of making it just a little bit bigger than the Emirates. But
it's also quite an unnecessary one. White Hart Lane wasn't exactly in bad condition.
No, so. I like White Hart Lane. White Hart Lane was awesome.
It was a good stadium.
One more thing quickly. You went back to making sure the acoustics are right. Do you know what used to be the loudest stadium in the Premier League, apparently?
I'm going to guess Leeds.
It might have been back when they were in the Premier League, but this was I think this was about 6 or 7 years ago I found this out, because I went there. It was Stoke City Stadium, the Bet365. It was apparently the loudest ground. Yeah, because it's really compact, yeah.
Much as we can absolutely brutalise Stoke for being a terrible team, playing terrible football and even doing terrible in the Championship, they've got some quite good fans. Their fans might be, you know, they don't look like the best bunch. Sorry, Stoke fans, I don't mean that in a harsh way, but every time you see them on TV... Come on, they look like they're either going to build your house for you or knock it down in pure violence. But they are great fans.
They are great fans.
You can't argue with that. All right. Yeah. I'm going to offend less people now.
You know, yeah, offended all of Stoke and most of London.
I really do quite like Stoke. That's the problem. Yeah. Sorry, guys. All right, okay. I said I'm about to offend less people. FIFA! So the FIFA awards have happened, and everyone is terribly confused by all of this.
Mm.
Let's try and approach this formulaically. So FIFA Pro Best Player, now this isn't the Ballon d'Or, but I suppose it's kind of as important as the Ballon d'Or. It's at least equivalent of Ballon d'Or because of the way it's voted for. Luka Modric won. So positive thing, I think that is a deserved win. I think that is a very much deserved win, do you?
Yeah, I kind of think of it more though as like a lifetime achievement award than it is that individual year. Because actually, I think Modric was better a couple of years ago than he was today. He just happened to have a really good year with getting to the Champions League final and the World Cup.
It's a bit like with actors at Oscars and all of that, like, where they give out an award to a really older actor. Like, who was it a few years ago before he unfortunately passed? Christopher Lee got given a really award because like all of his career had been Hammer Horror. And they were never really considered for awards, those kind of things. So they made a note of, yeah, this is actually one of the greatest acts of our generation. I do agree. I think this was a bit of a historic thing. And it was a bit of, I think, them wanting to sort of move things on from Ronaldo and Messi.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say I think that that was a big part of what they were thinking. But I also think it's absolutely deserved as well. For the year he's had in terms of getting to a World Cup final, a team that shouldn't have got to a World Cup final, winning a Champions League and probably being the most instrumental player for that. I think, yeah, that's absolutely right to go to Luka Modric.
Yeah, delighted to see him win it. Delighted for him, mainly, because he's such a good player.
Odd one, though. Salah finished third behind Ronaldo. I mean, Ronaldo won the Champions League, but didn't really do too much in that Champions League campaign. Liverpool, Salah, he contributed more to Liverpool's Champions League campaign than Ronaldo did for them. So you'd almost think, right, you've got to take that into account. Liverpool were probably more competitive in the league for them going into it as well. And neither of them had a particularly good World Cup. Ronaldo had one good game.
Yeah.
So I don't really get how they've gone for Ronaldo second.
So did Messi come fourth? Because for me, if he was actually talking about the best player of the year, it would probably be Messi. I would have given it to Modric or Salah ahead of either of them, because I think it's right that now is a good point to start transitioning out of this Messi-Ronaldo era. But, like, I don't know, man. The best player awards always just seem really, really muddled to me. It's so hard to clarify who is specifically the best player because of just, like, you can't compare Ronaldo to like, it's hard enough to compare Ronaldo to Messi. You can't compare it to Modric.
Do you think they should have separate awards for positions? So best midfielder and you include wingers and central midfielders, best striker and you include only forward players, best defender, best goalkeeper. Do you think that would be better or would it end up just being build up to the best striker?
But then to be honest, that's just essentially the team of the year, isn't it? You really build there. And like how do you compare, like, if you're talking about best midfielder, do you put Kante in the same place as De Bruyne? Like, they're completely different kind. They provide completely different things in a team and are expected to contribute differently. I do get that it's sometimes quite fun to be like, oh yeah, who's the best player this year? Who's this and that? But to be honest, it more often ends up being just because of stories rather than who actually performs the best. Like, Modric only won it this year because he won the Champions League final and got to the World Cup final. Ronaldo only won it last year because he won the Champions League. It rarely is the best performing player because otherwise it would have been Messi for pretty much the last 10 years.
It's the sad thing about these awards is we know they're kind of jokes. We know they're not serious. We know they're too political. We know there's just a whole bunch of crap voting that goes into it. But for me, the sad thing is that these awards have real historicity to them. And what I mean by that is we'll look back in 20 years and people will look back in 50 years and they'll use these as the measure of who was the best player of that time. They'll use that as the mark of if this player won these awards, it means he's the best player. We look back at Pelé and we say Pelé was clearly one of the, you know, if not the best player in the world, one of the best players of all time because of the awards he won. If you actually looked at his career, all of it spent at Santos.
Yeah.
You wouldn't really, in Europe especially, we wouldn't have given it that much credence. So we give it the credit it's deserved because of these awards. Now, it's the same thing is going to roll back in another 20, 30 years' time. People are going to look back and say these were the best players. I think that's for me where it gets a little bit worrying of how much is political and all those kinds of things, especially when you were looking at the Ronaldo Messi era, which is mainly, it was down to reputations more than anything. It was down to people's personal favourites. They preferred the way Ronaldo played to the way Messi played, despite the fact Messi might have had a better season or Ronaldo would have had a better season. And that's when you were thinking, but how can you judge that as the best player of the year? That exactly. Doesn't really make any real sense. So I do think it needs to be clarified a lot exactly what people are voting for, because the way it works is you've got the captains of the national team to vote, national team managers, you've got journalists, and it's a select pool of journalists, and you've got an online poll of the fans, which I think is the new thing. Each of those things accounts for 25%. I don't think fans should be allowed to vote, just putting it out there. I know...
It's too easy to hijack as well.
Yeah, and you know, you just know that Arsenal players are going to end up winning.
It's going to go to Aaron Ramsey.
But the thing is, when you're accounting for that, you need to give the captains, the managers, the journalists criteria on what they're voting for. you need to give them some outlines of here's why you should be voting for these players. So that way it's not just looking at goals scored, assists made, tournaments won. You're looking at overall performances for an entire year. I think that would be one big solution, but of course FIFA, if they ever did that, they'd bugger that up as well.
Yeah, and also it's just one of those things, I think most people don't really care enough for them to actually make drastic changes to it. I think most people like the discussion as opposed to the actual result.
And I think as well, with like captains and managers, I reckon it's the kind of thing they don't think about too much. They just sort of vote quite quickly and go, yeah, I reckon he was best. But it's not really, oh, can I measure him against these other 25 players? How was his performance in these games? They don't really know. They just sort of go, kind of like him.
Yeah.
He's all right. He was nice to me when I played against him. He's pretty good. I'll vote for him.
Yeah.
I think it's, and a reputation plays a lot. But all right, the other thing, Courtois won Goalkeeper of the Year.
He was probably the fourth best in the Premier League last year. I don't even know how he won it. That one annoys me.
I think Nick Pope was a better goalkeeper last year, but don't understand.
David De Gea had probably the single best goalkeeping performance the Premier League has ever seen last season. He had that game against Arsenal where he saved, he made like 9 saves or something, and most of them were ridiculous. And throughout the entire of the season, he was doing that. He saved 14 expected goals. And you give it to Courtois, who most Chelsea fans weren't even that upset to lose. Like, I think that is an absolute joke. Like, I can't understand.
I'm glad you mentioned De Gea, because he got into the FIFA Pro World 11.
Yeah.
With Courtois. Now, the difference is with the FIFA Pro Awards is that's voted for purely by the players. It's the FIFA Pro, it's the players' union. So that's just the players voting. But of course, it's all done in the same awards thing. So it's all done under the same umbrella. So you can't say, here's the best goalkeeper in the world, and he is not in the best team of the world. Because that doesn't make any sense. That's where there's no consistency. So if you're saying everyone's voting for this, I think you almost have to say, and everyone's voting for the other thing too. Otherwise, you end up with shit like this, which is nonsense. Because what that clearly means is national team managers, journalists, and online fans have voted overwhelmingly in favour of Courtois, whereas the players were like, no, that's De Gea. At what point do you give the balance of it? Other things in the FIFA World 11, Ronaldo's the main striker. Again, I don't know how he's going ahead of Harry Kane. Harry Kane, World Cup top goal scorer, scored more than him in the league, and they both won equal amounts in terms of diddly squat, really. I mean, I know Ronaldo won the Champions League, but
yeah,
again, right. I think if you're basing on performances, that's got to be Harry Kane. That's crazy. Hazard in there in front of Salah. Yep, that's one for you. Hazard, who with Chelsea finished, where did they finish? Fifth?
I mean, the thing is with that is I actually, you know, Hazard is probably the better player than Mo Salah, but if we're basing it purely off last year, he wasn't. So it's just dumb. It's like, it seems crazy. Yeah. They wrote that way. Like, I would have Hazard ahead of Salah every single day of the week, but not in the team based on last year.
You've got Messi in attacking midfield, and I would argue Isco or De Bruyne.
Probably De Bruyne. Yeah. I mean, Isco was amazing last year as well. I mean, who was on the right wing? Because that's where Messi was playing.
Right wing's Hazard. Messi's in the middle. Mbappe's on left. I personally agree with Mbappe. I think he, especially for France, when you look at that.
Yeah. And he's helped like define the year. And I think those little extra stories about like us getting really excited about him, it's quite fun to have him. And he was amazing in the World Cup. So yeah, I'm all right with that one.
Central midfield is Kante and Modric. Again, I'm okay with that. It maybe could have been Modric and Rakitic. I think there's an argument to be made for that. Kante didn't have a great year in terms of in the club level.
I would have picked Kante, I think.
Again, you could have maybe dropped Isco down into that as well. That could have been a possibility. In terms of other things, right. Marcello at left back. I can understand that. I think that's fair. Dani Alves at right back.
Yeah.
I can't remember when Dani Alves was the best right back in the world. Like, actually, he's played something like 16 games in the season.
That one did surprise me, but the thing that makes it surprised me about it is when you think of the actually world class right backs out there at the moment, and there's not an exceptional amount. Like, for me, Danny Carvajal wins that hands down. Like, I don't know how it's not him.
I would say it should have been between him, Carl Walker, but apparently they were classing Carl Walker as a centre back, and Joshua Kimmich.
Yeah, Josh Kimmich is. I'd happily.
All three of those players made it into the second and third 11.
Yeah.
They literally released like several 11s of this to sort of clarify where people were in order.
Yeah.
That's Dani Alves. That's another one where it's just a pure reputation.
Yeah.
People just went, oh, it's the players. They got that thing through, and they said, oh, you've got a vote. Just went, who's the best right back? Dani Alves, wasn't it? Yeah, all right. Just wrote down Danny Alves. They got so used to writing Danny Alves there every time they were asked. They just wrote his name again. And centre-backs, obviously mentioned De Gea in goal. Centre-backs is Ramos and Varane.
That's fair enough. Varane particularly, because he was really good in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really have too much argument, but I know Liverpool fans would argue of Ramos, but, you know, he did win, so.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, true.
Whether he breaks someone's shoulder or not, he's still a great defender.
Yeah, but they just need to get some real consistency there.
Yeah.
That is just all nonsense. And as I said, it might seem unimportant, but the historicity of it, the way it works backwards, that in future times we'll be looking at this and going, who was the best team in 2018? And we'll look at that. And then players like De Bruyne and Isco, they'll get forgotten about. They'll get forgotten about because they weren't included in these kinds of things.
Yeah.
I think that's a worrying sort of thing you don't want to happen.
And in fact, looking at that, not a single Man City player, was there?
No. And that is the runaway best Premier League season any teams have had.
But by a stupid margin, like way like better than the Invincibles, who are like the most revered Premier League team ever. Like, I find that pretty incredible. Although they were more known for being a team unit, so I guess it's quite hard to pick a single standout. But just put De Bruyne in there. Just, you know, something like that would have been fine.
Well, pretty especially bizarre. If you've got Kante. I love Kante as a player, but you've got to go right, put him instead of... I know you're messing around with the formation, you're playing attacking mids and centre mid, but that team isn't actually going to go out there and play, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, actually, Kante probably got in there for a lot of his credit for his performances at the World Cup, because with the exception of the final, he was absolutely ridiculous at the World Cup in the group stages. In the knockout. He like, single-handedly won some of those games with him. Well, I say single-handedly, him and Pogba mainly, but they were amazing, man.
Yeah, well, FIFA can't organise a piss-up in a brewery, as the old saying goes. The award show in general was an absolute joke. I watched 15 minutes of it and gave up. It was a complete joke. Idris Elba cracking jokes that no one laughs at. The VAR joke, seriously, guys, look up on YouTube, Idris Elba's VAR joke. He literally wheels out a VAR and then waits for a minute as VAR makes a decision to what it's going to say for the best newcomer award.
That's quite funny.
No, literally no one's laughing. It's so awkward.
Oh, man, I love Idris Elba, though.
Who was it asked? They brought up, was it Big Shaq? I think it was.
No way.
It was just, it's such a joke. And you just think, the people who organised that were like, yeah, this will be like the Oscars. It'll be really cool. And it actually happened. And they were all just sitting there in the audience going, oh, this is terrible. Oh, what have we done? This isn't even an award show anymore. This is just That's bad so London. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we are going to talk about the League Cup. We've got to start on one result. Obviously, one result is a lot more consequential than all of the other ones.
Yeah.
Blackpool beat Queen's Park Rangers. Just confirms how far Steve McLaren has taken QPR.
Oh, man. Gotta love that. Like, do Blackpool, like, have a pitch again? Because for a long time, they didn't. Like, I remember when we were playing them in the Championship, we had Orlandi came out and was like, that is the worst pitch I've ever played football on by like a mile. But I don't know what they're doing at the moment. But that is bad. That is bad.
All right. We'll talk about the actual thing. Man United, of course, they went and lost to Derby County. I've got to confess, I only saw the second half of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I actually managed to see all of the good stuff in the second half. Isn't that good? Right. Okay. First of all, though, Derby, massive credit. That goal by Harry Wilson, out on loan from Liverpool. That is genuinely a Roberto Carlos-style free kick. Moves in and then out, top corner. You see the keeper rooted in a stop, and you think, you should surely be able to read that, but in real time, that goes quickly, shifts so much. That's world class.
That's what I was
going to say.
That should
be winning Puskas next year. That's incredible.
Mate, it was incredible. It's one of those ones where like you watch it for the first time and think, oh, keeper's got to save that. What's he doing just standing still? And then you look at it again and go, oh, it literally like did a right angle. Just like swapped direction like, halfway through.
And it did that in about the space of, it went from boot to goal in about 1.5 seconds.
Yeah, what a man.
So you've got that time to adjust as a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Incredible, incredible goal. I thought their second goal was also well worked. Absolutely not offside. I know a few people have said because the other player was standing in the way. No, that's not what the offside rule is. Just read it, then you're wrong. Good goal, well worked. Fellaini comes up with the equaliser.
Yeah.
And again, I've always said I like Fellaini. That's why... Sorry, I know United fans. I know a lot of you don't like Fellaini. That's why you have him.
Yeah.
Because as much as you've lost that game, he does big moments for you. I do. Yeah. I think when people criticise Fellaini and going, oh, he's not a United player. Well, you bloody signed him. Deal with it. He does it for you. works. So
even I've warmed to Fellaini over the last couple of years, and I used to hate him. So
I loved having this happen. When you won him at Brighton.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he would. I mean, imagine like a team with him and Glenn Murray in it. Like
Jesus
they would,
Christ.
They would have no legs at the end of the game.
I reckon Everton would probably take him back.
Yeah. Oh man, mate, they'd
take him back.
They'd be all over him. Like they need a massive like brick shithouse central midfielder. They'd be all over having him back.
Stop hating on Fellaini, United.
Yeah, we're gonna start a hashtag.
You know who you can hate on a little bit more, even though I do like him. That's Phil Jones.
Yeah. Bad penalty. And they had a bad game.
It wasn't the worst penalty in the world. I mean, but I think the problem is that Scott Carson looked genuinely so awful at saving penalties that to actually have your penalty saved by him is kind of embarrassing because he was all over the place in that penalty shot. He's like leaving half a goal open and going, I'll go on, go there. And the players were just going, well, okay then. Yeah. I'll put that in the bottom corner. There's no way you can even get across it, even if you read that right. And they just kept doing that right up until the point where he actually finally stood up and Phil Jones just telegraphed where he was going. Frank Lampard obviously getting his win over Jose Mourinho. All sorts of things have been coming out about Mourinho afterwards. There's an argument with Paul Pogba. We'll come on to that one in a little moment. There's the official thing where he's told Paul Pogba you cannot be captain in any way, shape or form for United. Okay, is Mourinho actually in crisis now? I say a lot about narratives on this podcast about how the media turns things. Is this genuinely a crisis now?
No, because I don't think it particularly changes anything. I don't think that result on its own changes it. It's got like slightly errs of when they lost to Sevilla in the Europa
League. The result
maybe season.
Not, but maybe it's more like the confidence, morale, the belief in Mourinho from the fans, from the players, from the board. Is this one of those moments where it could really be like the turning point?
But the thing is, Mourinho knows what he's saying. He knows the things he's saying is firing people up and is going at the wrong people. And you can either see that as two things, in that he knows what he's saying and he's trying to get himself sacked, or he knows what he knows what he's saying and he knows he can get away with it because he's trusted at the club. And the thing is you do occasionally, especially in those couple of weeks where they were winning games, the last couple of weeks where things didn't look that worrying after the Tottenham game, you do still get these little stories feed out about players saying he's completely different at the training ground, all of this kind of stuff. He has no problem with the players don't have a problem with him. And it's a chance that's just them trying to be professionals and trying to hold on to their season. But I still think that result doesn't change an awful lot about their season, because frankly, it wouldn't really have mattered if Mourinho won the League Cup at the end of the season. That's not really what I think people want to see from United. So
much them out of three competitions.
Do you think?
League Cup, Premier League, they're not going to win a Champions League. Not going to win any of those three things. They've got FA Cup, really.
Yeah, but I think another top four finish is good for them this season, which I think is a sad thing to say about United. But, I mean, Tottenham look like they're easing off a little bit. It's possible that they could sneak into their place. Chelsea probably won't. I can only imagine them getting tired around Christmas. That might be the only thing that lets them down. But
Arsenal,
I don't know, man.
Better.
Yeah, but they're Arsenal, so they'll finish sixth.
Remember when everyone used to make Arsenal fourth jokes? That seems like such a long time ago.
I know. Those were the good days, they called them. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I've seen that clip of Mourinho and Pogba arguing on the training ground. And I saw that, and I kind of wanted to headbutt my screen, because apparently that constitutes an argument now. Like, have they forgotten who Roy Keane is and who Sir Alex Ferguson is? No, those are people where you'd have an argument with. That was like, Pogba had clearly done something he was quite pleased with, and Mourinho just went, yeah, not that good, keep training harder, and Pogba looked around like, really? I thought that was quite good. I don't know what actually was being said. He could have literally told him to, you know, screw his mother. Like, anything could have been said there. What? But it looked like such a thing of nothing. And then, like, all this big deal is made out of this thing happening. I think the where people have given it credit is he actually has come out and said Pogba's never being captain of United again, which clearly something must have happened. You don't just turn around one day and go, you're never being captain again. No reason. You did nothing, but I've just decided that now. He clearly decided something wrong with the attitude, which I think why people are reading more into that incident than there's probably in it.
I mean, you're good to bring up the fact that a lot worse stuff has happened between players and managers. Like, remember when Balotelli fought with Mancini? And like there's all those photos of like Mancini like cowering from Balotelli.
But there's also the ones about Roy Keane and the Islanders. Yeah. Where he was absolutely laid into Harry Arter. All these things were being injured. Yeah. So and even in the modern era, there's a different standards.
Didn't Tony Pulis headbutt someone in a shower as well? Isn't that one of them?
Who was the one who, was it Pardew on Mailer?
Yeah, he wasn't a manager, but yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Yeah, I thought that was a whole lot of summing into nothing. Something else happened, so they were thinking, oh, is this something too? But I got to say, I genuinely think this is one of those moments. This is almost one of those like Louis van Gaal moments where you know it's turned. You know that the fans especially have kind of gone, yeah, I wouldn't mind if he left now. Just knowing there's a final point now. And when you said like the players are coming around saying, oh no, he's different in training and he's a good guy and all of that lot. They always say that. Said that about Van Gaal right up until the point where actually you've been fired as you won the FA Cup. Said that about Moyes and then they turn around and went, he's banned mayonnaise, what dick. They literally just turn around instantly and go, no, he was doing everything wrong. We were lying before. Yeah. So I think that sort of stuff will come out really. I think for me, looking at this, just from, especially the communication that's coming out from United, from Mourinho, from all this lot, rather than the stuff the journalists are saying, there's a very big tonal shift. It's not even like making a positive out of a negative or just trying to spin the negative into being not so negative. It's almost like the Brendan Rodgers thing I started the show with. This is just a negative thing. Him turning around and having a press conference saying he's never being captain again. That's him saying there's been an argument. You didn't need the stuff, the image. That could have been ignored completely if he didn't say that. Him saying that is saying, there's a divide here. I think that's him almost saying, Paul's got to choose. I think this is, it's such a small moment, losing to Derby. It's not that big of a deal. I think this is a real turning point. I think things are going to really start to intensify on Mourinho now.
I think the problem is with Mourinho, the problem is every now and again he does this where he calls players out and picks on players. And actually, a lot of the time it can work out for the good. We've seen it work out with Luke Shaw. There's actually a really good video I think probably a year and a half ago now, maybe a year ago, of him with Jesse Lingard, like Jesse Lingard's filming a video and Mourinho goes to the camera and says, oh, you can film a video, but you can't score a goal. And then about 6 months later, he went on that run where he was scoring a load of goals and then he dropped him. We'll ignore that. But I do wonder as to whether this is just his way of trying to get something out of Pogba that shows a bit more team spirit rather than, because he is an individual. Like as much as people, he is on the pitch. He does behave like an individual and maybe Mourinho just wants him to be a bit more of a team player.
I totally understand what you're saying, and I do actually agree. I think that's what Mourinho was trying to do.
Yeah.
I think he's just realised it's not worked. I think he's realised Pogba is one of those prima donna players. He's you know, Pogba's not playing for United. Pogba's playing for Pogba. It's like Ronaldo wasn't playing for Real Madrid. Ronaldo was playing for Ronaldo. At least Messi, you can give him the credit of, he genuinely was playing for Barcelona. That was probably his first thought, rather than just Messi, Messi, Messi. Pogba's in that Ronaldo category of it's all about him. Mourinho did try to turn that around, realised it's not working, and now he's trying to figure out how can he put the pressure on the board to get rid of Pogba and not him.
Yeah.
Or at least make it so it's the board are backing him publicly rather than saying, and we're protecting both of our assets here. I mean, this is him trying to move that, and I don't think there's enough confidence in Mourinho for him to actually succeed at doing that. I think the realistic option is actually at the end of the season, both of them leave.
Do you think he'll get to the summer?
Yeah, no, I don't think United are the kind of club that will sack him that early. It might be like they sack him a few games in advance, like with Brian Giggs, but they're not going to cut loose near January. That's just not going to happen at that club. You can't improve on that situation even if you do the sacking. You can't make it any better whoever you bring in, because you can't bring anyone who is that much better or give them the time to actually build up in pre-season. So it's a pointless thing to do. They're going to be aware of that. It can only work really if you're trying to avoid relegation and get that bounce. I think that's the only time where you do those sackings early. I think both will be gone once summer hits. I think Pogba's realised he was sold something to United that wasn't quite what he wants, because he's clearly all about himself, but to be all about yourself, you've got to win trophies. Ibrahimovic was always all about himself. He could always justify it. Wherever he went, he was top scorer. Wherever he went, he won trophies, he won the league. So you can turn around and say, I'm the greatest, even though you're not, because you've got that backing you. Pogba's going to United, and he's probably looking around going, if I leave this, having won a Europa League and an FA Cup, this doesn't actually look that good for me. That's not actually that big a deal. Whereas he goes, play for Barcelona, I'm probably winning the league once every other year. I'm probably winning Champions League once every 3 years.
Yeah.
He knows he's going to get that backing. So I think with Mourinho, I think it's going to be the Louis van Gaal moment. It's going to not be like, oh, and it all ends in fire, like Moyes, but it's going to be, yeah, we're done with this now. Let's just, let's both of us move on from this.
Yeah. I do think the World Cup helped drive a bit of a wedge between them as well, because it was when Pogba was playing so well and everyone kind of just went, oh yeah, he is really good. Like, kind of just like, reminded you of, like, oh yeah. Yeah, he was an 80 million pound player. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, maybe he is a slightly better technical footballer than Ander Herrera. Like, maybe, you know, like, I love Ander Herrera actually, but, it's interesting because the more and more I sort of look at this stuff and more I see it in the last few weeks, part of me equally wants them both to disappear and be really, really good somewhere else, because it's just annoying watching two really, really talented people just get wasted at their club. Because I think people will be surprised that there is as much wrong with United as a whole as there is between, like, Pogba and Mourinho, which is the story at the moment. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if there's much more wrong with United than people would like to admit.
I've said that I think this is Mourinho's last ever season in the Premier League, if not one of his last ever club managerial seasons. But I don't want to see him go. He's fun. I like him. He makes the Premier League interesting, like, just by being such a cock in so many ways.
Yeah, mate. Jose to Wolves. That's what I want.
I think that is possible, but I don't think it would happen.
I don't think he'd do it either. But,
I agree. I think Man United is one of the... I think Man United have almost entered into an Arsenal era, you know, where during that Wenger era where there's something quite wrong, but you don't know what it is. The club's making money, the club's doing okay, you're not doing disastrously, you're winning the odd cup and doing that. But you can't ever reach the heights you did, and you can't really tell why, because the players you're signing, yeah, they're pretty good. Managers you've got, yeah, they're pretty good. In fact, everything seems pretty good. So why can't we bloody win the league?
What's crazy about it is, like, you can totally see either, like, let's say, for example, if Klopp or Pochettino had gone to United instead of their respective clubs. And you think about, like, when Klopp came to Liverpool and brought literally an entirely new philosophy and, like, a totally new attitude to Liverpool at the time. And now they're one of the best teams in the country. Same with Pochettino at Tottenham. And then Mourinho came in with his same old ways, and everyone was just like, we've seen this before, this isn't the United way, all this kind of stuff. Like, it'd be interesting to see what would have happened in, like, the alternative reality where Poch had gone to United or something like that.
I think anyone who would have succeeded at United would have been Guardiola. I think the other two, for some reason, I just don't think it would have worked out.
Really?
But tell you what that does do, that does lead us onto a fantastic little conversation we were planning on having. Now, this is about Phil Foden. And youth players. Now, we are going to be releasing tomorrow we're going to have released yesterday, just keep an eye out for which one, a really, really good conversation about young players and about the FIFA changes to the loan system. So keep an eye out for that. It's either tomorrow or it's already out there. Have a listen to it. It's a very good one. But this conversation is about Phil Foden more than anything. He, at City, scored his first goal for the City senior team against Oxford United. Again, it's not really like a big scalp, but he celebrated it in a big way. You can tell it meant a lot to him. He is a Man City fan. And it's a good moment to see this young player coming through and doing well. Now, I've got two questions about this. One, is Man City really as good at developing these young players as everyone says they are? And are they really doing as good a job with the current young crop of talent they've got, as people say they are? And two, how would Phil Foden do at another club? Or how would another manager do at Man City with that same youth talent? Harry, go!
Right. First question, are Man City very good at developing young players? Don't know. It's too early to tell. The issue is Jadon Sancho left. That's one of the big issues, is because he's leaving because he's like, oh, I'll get the opportunity sooner at Dortmund, which he has. So that was obviously a good decision for him. Or he's left because he genuinely doesn't see a path for him in the first team with the amount of talent they've got in his position.
They're players who are currently around the first team. So not the 18, 17-year-olds. I know Foden's an 18-year-old, but he's clearly his talent level.
Okay.
He's something else. I'm talking about the likes of Leroy Sané, Raheem Sterling, all of that lot. And what I mean by that is, everyone forgets Raheem Sterling probably had one of his best ever seasons at Liverpool. He wasn't turned into something he wasn't at City. He's not become he's become a better player in some ways, but he's not become a different player. He's not a player. It's still basically the exact same. But you look at Leroy Sané, for instance, he's struggling to get into that team. Gabriel Jesus doesn't get as much time as everyone thinks he does. I don't know. I think a lot gets made of the City's young players and their commitment to playing these young players. But then you also see them go out and sign Riyad Mahrez for 60 million. And you think, why didn't need that? You didn't need to do that. You see that their squad is actually, in a lot of ways, an aging squad. and that really these young players here, even John Stones, isn't getting regular games. He's still having to fight between Otamendi and company. Are they really as committed to this as everyone thinks they are?
Yeah, I think they are. I don't necessarily agree that Sterling hasn't improved that much. Like, obviously, you were saying he has improved, but hasn't necessarily changed that much of a player. I think he's changed radically. Like, when he was at Liverpool, he was basically just a pace merchant with a half-decent finish. And now he's basically a full out-and-out, cutting inside kind of dribbling winger who can't finish anymore. So, no, I'm kidding. He's actually got much better finishing as well. But, No, I think they're doing an excellent job. Like, Sané was incredible last season. Whether or not he's getting into the team, I feel like not getting in the Germany World Cup squad probably hit his attitude a little bit. He is still only 21 or something, so he's got loads of time. People forget that Zinchenko got 20 games last season, even though they were at left back and he's more of a midfielder. Like, that, maybe that's, you can be a bit bothered by the fact that he wasn't playing his proper position, but I would have thought he'd just happy to be playing. Benjamin Mendy, if we're talking specifically about the English players or just any young players.
I mentioned Gabriel Jesus, and I'm pretty sure that's not an English name.
No, it's not. But we've been talking a lot about how most clubs don't even play young players at all. Like, there aren't many other clubs that would have a rotating 20, 21-year-old striker who's scoring 15 goals last season than Gabriel Jesus. Like, there's not many of them, mainly because none of them could really afford to have them. But I think they are doing a perfectly good job.
I was mostly asking to see if there was any disagreement there, but I do mostly agree.
Okay, good. That's easy. And Stones, actually, I think Stones and Laporte will be the starting centre-backs throughout most of the season this year. I think they'll play the most games. Like, the only real old ones in there now are Kyle Walker's getting close to 30, isn't he? David Silva's pretty old. Fernandinho is definitely old. And Aguero's getting on a bit. Other than that, they're all below 25, I think. So they could have an absolutely frightening team for another 6 or 7 years. Or Guardiola will leave and they'll go with him. So
it's such a weird game, isn't it? We talk about someone who's like 28 and it's like, you're old.
Yeah.
You're an old person.
It's like, oh, he's got to be thinking about retiring soon at 32. And it's like, oh my God.
Carl Walker's 28 years old and he'd be the second youngest person in my office where I work.
Yeah.
That scares me. That fact. Oh,
that is bizarre.
All right, but with players like Phil Foden, do you think that they could do better at another, say, big club? And I'm talking, you know, Everton upwards, we're talking top six upwards. And do you think other managers could be doing better with these players? Or do you think that, for instance, the likes of Martial and Rashford would be more successful than the likes of City under Guardiola?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Foden, it's one of these things where you quite often see with Guardiola, he had these like sort of pet project players. Like, we've seen it with Sterling a few seasons ago where he like really, or even last year where he like really got into him and really started teaching him things about this game, like as an individual, but really focused on Sterling. And what I'm hoping is that he's going to transition that to Foden so that Foden becomes like the big crux of his attention and he really develops him, because there's no doubt Guardiola is incredibly good at developing individual players. Like, there isn't a player in that City team who hasn't improved under his coaching. Even John Stones, who some people still have question marks about him, turns out he's undeniably amazing. And I think going to the sort of other question, which is that Rashford and Martial are sort of the good examples because they're on the other end of Manchester and whatever, they would definitely prove under Guardiola, and there's almost no doubt about it. But it's just so hard. Like I think Martial is as much, if not more, naturally gifted than Sané.
People forget when they signed him, you know, they signed him with a clause for if he ever wins the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, yes, they would, but I don't know whether that comes down to, I think that comes down to a little bit more than just Guardiola as well, because I think it comes down to the fact that they were performing in a top team. The style of football that Manchester City play is more accommodating to those kind of players to facilitate the things that they like to do, like Sané likes to dribble and run in behind and shoot and things like that, whereas Martial will be expected to drag back and do a little bit more defending. City, you'll be taught to press a bit more than you would at United. You learn different things. And then that sort of with the Foden being better at other clubs, I think the only thing that would benefit Foden more than being at City right now would be playing 30 games or so at another club. And I still don't think he would. The only one I think he might do that at would be Spurs. I think anywhere else he probably wouldn't, because everywhere else just seems to have such tight midfields at the moment. Like, you're not going to get in ahead of Kante, Jorginho or Kovacic. He's not going to get in ahead of Naby Keita, would be the one he would compete with in the Liverpool team. He's not going to get in ahead of Pogba. maybe Mata he would compete with. And I think the only one he would get in would be with Spurs, because I think he would offer something different to what Dele Alli. He would be a good replacement for Dembele, is essentially what I think with him. But I don't think he would be massively more successful at any other club at the moment.
All right, slightly different question then. How many appearances in 3 years do you think Phil Foden has had in all competitions?
Okay, it would surprise me if it was more than 15 or 20.
Okay, it's 14.
14,
yeah. And the majority of those aren't first, they're not like starting or anything like that. I think he's only had one 90 minutes and one which was 75 minutes, but most of these are coming on late on in the game, 50 minutes onwards. 14 appearances. Now, I'm going to ask a question. Is this actually an example of youth player development being done right, or is he a player who should be having more time? Now, what I mean by that is we obviously always talk about youth players and we say we want them to get more game time and we want them to be playing more and doing better. It's also not the case that young players need to be brought in slowly. They need to be not overworked so they don't end up like Michael Owen retiring at, 32, something like that, or Wayne Rooney, where they're clearly exhausted. Is this an example of it being done well, or is it actually, at this point, he needs to be getting into the first team, he needs to be getting those 20 games under a belt in a season, not 14 over three seasons?
Personally, I would always rather go with he should be going and playing 30 games with somebody else. That's always what I'd rather see from a player. God, I just looked at his age. He's born in 2000. That's wrong. No one's born in 2000.
Some of our listeners might be born in 2000.
Oh, well.
And some of them might be Stoke fans, so they really
hate us. they've had an awful day. I just hope they're not Mourinho fans as well. No, I generally always go with I would rather players were playing somewhere in a first team all season. Like, I would almost rather he was ripping the championship to shreds than he was sitting on the bench for City. But the other problem is I have absolutely no reason to expect City to play him. They have such a ridiculous amount of depth in his position, specifically as an attacking midfielder, like with De Bruyne, even Bernardo Silva this season has been playing there, David Silva, and even Gundogan can play there. He is not a more complete player than any of them. There's no realistic reason to ask City to play him more, which is why I'd want him to go out on loan. But then again, he's training with those players, so he's going to learn a lot from them. And it's such a 50-50 that there's never one solution to breaking a first-team player. And I hope they're doing the right thing by holding on to him for a bit longer. If he doesn't get 15 appearances, maybe three or four 90-minute games at least, by the end of the season, I would say he really needs to be looking, or even by January, I'd say he really needs to be looking about going out on loan, because he's so stupidly good not to be playing. And you'd love him at Southampton, wouldn't you? We'd love him at Brighton. Like,
I would stab a homeless person to get Phil Foden.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like, and
even like a good homeless person who's got prospects.
Well,
you know, not one of the ones who you know is going to have overdosed within 3 years. I mean, one of the ones who could get his life back on track.
Okay, and you'd. Oh mate.
Man, homeless Stoke fans who are under the age of 50 are not doing well tonight.
Oh, this is awful.
That might be a demographic of people who genuinely don't exist.
Yeah, I think we at least we've alienated a very, very, very small minority.
We'll talk a little bit now about Premier League games that's been gone and some of the games we've got coming up. Some notable results from last week's games. West Ham look pretty firmly back on track now. They look like they're actually starting to have an actual team. I mean, the big thing is they're getting their wide players more and more into it and playing less centrally. Bajor of Chelsea, I think that's a big result for a Chelsea team that have been sweeping teams aside.
I do think Chelsea probably could have won this game, and so could have West Ham. They had a couple of good chances on the counter attack, but Chelsea did have a lot of chances, like those sort of half chances where you'd expect at one point Hazard to just put one in the top corner. But they did do relatively well.
Another result is Arsenal beat Everton 2-0. Everton, I thought, was sorely unlucky in that game. They got hit with a 1-2, and the second goal, linesman, what are you doing?
Yeah,
that's such a bad decision. I can't even understand it.
Yeah,
never a goal, never in a million years. And I think that second goal was what really took Everton out of the game. Up until that point, they were dominant. Pejček had a hell of a game, and he had to have one hell of a game.
Yeah, that was the best game he's had in a long time for Arsenal, probably like for most of last season.
So yeah, Everton haven't had the best start of a season, but I think that is very unlucky.
Yeah, I'd feel pretty positive watching that as an Everton fan. You did all the right things, and these aren't necessarily the games you're going to expect to win. So I think you can you can look forward to the rest of the season. Like, even Theo Walcott looked up for it. Richarlison looked back to his best. So we can hope to see more from Everton. I still think they're going to finish sort of like 7th, 8th. So.
Yeah. Other big results. Actually, I'm not going to mention Man City being Cardiff 5-0 because, well, what else would you expect?
Yeah.
Burnley winning 4-0 at Bournemouth, against Bournemouth. I think that's a big result. That's a big one for Burnley to not just get back onto winning form, but to do it in a really emphatic way where they were dominant and played well. That's credit to them. And I do hope that they sort of put their season back on track. It's early days. They can still really go ahead and do something this season.
Oh, sorry. What's interesting about that Burnley-Bournemouth game is it's like Burnley going back to last season where it's like, oh yeah, just have 5 shots on target and score 4 goals. It's like they're just back to witchcraft. Like Sean Dyche just started sacrificing those goats again. Like, it's just
he thought he could get away with not sacrificing animals. So.
Yeah.
He's realised, oh, that god was doing me well.
Yeah.
Do you know who wasn't sacrificing any animals? Crystal Palace and Newcastle. Mm. One of the worst games. And you know what? I think everyone probably looked at that one and went, yeah, that's 0-0. I don't think anyone expected goals in that game. What a terrible game.
You know it's a bad sign when the story of the game was Wan-Bissaka getting a bottle thrown at his head.
Yeah, non-game. Very annoying. Leicester beat Huddersfield 3-1. I think that's quite a good one because Leicester are starting to show that they're not just like a flash in the pan kind of team. They are regularly going to compete for maybe Europa League spots, that kind of thing. I think that's quite a positive thing.
Yeah.
We got absolutely battered by Liverpool. But we drew the second half. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that well.
You know, it's a bad sign when Mark Hughes comes out and says, oh yeah, second half was all about damage limitation. Oh, you don't want the manager to actually say that. That's the kind of stuff you say to the pie.
The thing is, though, if you're a fan and you lose 3-0, it's kind of the same as if you lose 6-7-0. It's not really a lot of difference. You've hated your time all the same.
Yeah.
At least if you were trying to get back into it, you wouldn't hate it quite as much. We're in trouble.
I also really hate the argument that goal difference matters that much, because frankly, to be honest, if you're needing goal difference to keep you up at the end of the season, you don't deserve to stay up anyway.
Yeah,
like, that's my view on it. Like, it's a load of crap, the whole sort of, oh, we need to sort of hold on and make sure we didn't concede 3 or 4 more. Like, you can argue it's a hit to the confidence, but like, come on. It's more important that you go out and give the fans something to actually applaud rather than flashing your lights and giving them
crap. I agree. And we'll forget the fact that Southampton were mostly dependent on goal difference last season to really move into Swansea. United drew Wolves. We've obviously already talked quite a lot about United. I think the real surprise about that game was just how dominant Wolves were. And I think everyone said that Wolves were going to take some big scalps, so it shouldn't be too much of a surprise, because I think they'll take points off the other big teams as well. Man United at home against the side that's just promoted. I can have sympathy for Pogba when he says we should be attacking, because you should be attacking. So I would expect Southampton to attack in that game. And I don't expect anything from us at home other than for it to be a miserable, quiet affair.
I do love that Wolves, I had the sort of doubt about them whether I thought they were going to end up being a bit of like, you know, no offence, but like a plastic club, you know, where they've just got all this money and this investment and George Mendes.
And QPR.
Yeah, essentially. And then you actually look at them and go, oh no, they're actually really entertaining and they have some awesome players. So I'm actually quite happy for them. I hope they stay up as long as we do as well. So.
Well, speaking of Brighton, you boys lost 2-1 to Tottenham.
Yeah.
Standard result.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Really arguing against it. We've got some good games coming up this next weekend. We've got West Ham v United. It's going to be early kickoff. I think that's going to be a quite good game, because I think West Ham at home are going to want to try and attack and finally get something going at the London Stadium. And United, if they lose this one, especially against a West Ham team that people still throw the hammer at them for, like what I did there, for being a bit rubbish. I think that could really be putting the boot into United. I think United should win that, because West Ham are particularly good at home and their centre is so weak and United's centre is so strong that should be a no contest. But I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham went and did something in that game. I think they're looking much improved under Pellegrini now. Other big games that are going on, City-Brighton. I'm looking forward to that one, mainly just to see what a team should do against Brighton, as opposed to what we did, where we collapsed within 2 minutes.
I'm going to the Etihad, mate. I'm going. Last season, I saw us. It was Yaya Toure's last ever game for City, and he played the 90 minutes, or played like 85 minutes or whatever, and he absolutely ripped us to shreds. Literally, I've never seen one player dominate a game so much. It makes it amazing that Pep doesn't like him for whatever reason. But yeah, I'm going.
Can I give you some advice?
Drink a lot.
yeah, get very drunk, because that's going to be the only fun you're actually going to see.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to see anything fun from the Brighton players in that game. Oh, well, we're playing Wolves away. Of course, nobody really cares about that, but I'm just going to put it out there now. We're going to lose. we're just going to be so much worse than newly promoted clubs. I wouldn't even back us to beat Cardiff. That'd be a fucking 0-0. Very good afternoon game, though. This could be a really, really good game. Chelsea beat Liverpool, and that's two proper attacking teams going to be going for it. You're looking at arguably the two best players in the league in Salah and Hazard going up against each other. That's going to be an impressive game. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah,
which, of course, it's going to be 0-0, of course, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
So when Sky Sports is a big Super Sunday thing, you're just like, 2-0-0s coming right up.
And then both managers are going to be like, Klopp's going to be like, an away draw is pretty good for us this season. And then Sarri's going to be like, we're still a new team, we're still adjusting, and a draw is pretty good for us. And we're like, wasn't good for us though, was it? We're watching.
Yeah.
We want to watch the two of the most attacking teams in the world rip each other to shreds and have like a 5-5.
Like, yeah, here's what I'm doing, like 4-3 or something like that. I'm actually backing Chelsea in this game. I think they've looked really impressive, and I think people have been saying, oh, they've only played against, you know, not the big teams yet. I think they'll surprise people.
If there was ever a time for Hazard to show up with another hat trick, that would be the day. That would be.
Do you know who I reckon could have a big game? I bet you he plays.
Yeah. Giroud. Oh, yes, that's a great shout.
I could see that coming a mile off. Liverpool defence, and I know Van Dijk. He, like, every looks really dominant in the air and all of that, like, but he doesn't like someone who elbows him in the ribs, and that is really terrible. He doesn't like someone who gets physical with him and just batters him. Chelsea, sorry, if you're listening, play Giroud. Trust me.
I would love
one.
That.
I know this one.
I adore Giroud, man. I adore Giroud so much. I think he's such a good player. Have you seen the interview that Troy Deeney did about Van Dijk recently? He said about Van Dijk, I've said it many times that I hate him. He's too big, too strong, too quick, too good on the ball, loves fighting, and has a good head of hair. It's really odd. And then he says he's one of those guys that sprays on his top, so he always smells lovely. When he runs past you, it's like, I can catch you. But, I, you know, it's really bizarre. Slightly homoerotic player.
He's an odd chap, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Right, yeah. If that game ends up 0-0 by 70 minutes, I think they should release for Hawks. And if you want to get that joke, listen to our show. Yeah, there we go. There's a little bit of plugging. But alright, that's all we've got for this week. So thanks very much for joining us. And as I said, we've got some other good stuff going out at the moment. We've got a really, really good debate about a new loan system and young players. We've got some really good debates coming up as well as some great other shows. We've got a wrestling podcast and F1 podcast if you're into that kind of stuff. Please give them a listen. We've got some really good people on that. Check us out on social media at VT Football on Facebook and on Twitter at VT Football. And please join us again next week. Good night.